We continue by learning the Nishmas David ben Menachem Lishem Cham Yaakov Mithinuch Osei Leo Wearing Get in Periches Mishnah Dalet. Our Mishnah is going to be discussing what we call a get yashan. That's where a husband wrote a get for his wife, and before he gave it to her, he had yichud with her. So there's a machokas beisham beisilel whether a husband is able to be megarish his wife with a get yashan, with this get that he wrote, but before he gave it to her, they had yichud. So beishamay omim poter adam esishto beget yashan. Beishamay says a person can be megarish his wife with a get yashan. It's not a problem that he had yichud with her between the writing and the giving. Beisilel ostrim. Beisilel says you cannot divorce your wife with a get yashan. What's the issue with a get yashan? And they get it's a kosher get, and you're planning to give it to your wife. So what's the issue with the fact that there was yichud in between the writing and the get and the giving? So the Gemara explains what we call gezeira shema yomru gita kodem levna. It's a gezeira decree because maybe people will say the get preceded the child. Meaning Basil is afraid that maybe a person will keep the get around, the husband will keep the get that he wrote around for 2 or 3 years between the writing and the giving, which is possible that he would do. They write it now and then eventually he's going to divorce his wife 2-3 years later. Now they're still living together. And they have a child and they're still married. And then he's going to divorce her with his get. So what's going to happen? After years, people will forget what had happened. And they'll find the get and say, oh my gosh, look, the get is written, has a date from the whatever it is. This date is written on the get. And they realize, but hold on, the husband didn't divorce his wife till much later. Aha. So really, he was divorced earlier. She was divorced from him much earlier. This is not their child from this marriage. She must have had a child as a divorced woman. She was not married and had a child. And people will be motzi las on her children and say, oh, this is a child that was born out of wedlock. So therefore, you're not allowed to use that. Now, this is not a get muktam. Don't be concerned that, oh, hold on, this is a get where the date is too early. Now, that's not a problem. A get muktam is where you write the writing of the get on one date, and then it's signed on another day. So that's a get muktam. That's another problem. That's another disqualification. But a get that's written and signed on the same day, but only given to the wife after some time, that's not a get muktam. The only problem would be, as we say here, a get yashan, assuming they had yichud. But no, if there's no yichud, a husband can write a get today and give it to her in a year from now. That's also, it's not, as long as written and signed on the same day, and as long as they don't have yichud, so there's not going to be a problem at all. And obviously, Beis Shammai holds that we're not afraid that people will say Gita Kodem Levna. They're going to say that, oh, maybe she had this child out of wedlock after already they were divorced and she was not married at all. So I'm not afraid of that. So therefore, you're allowed to be Megarish with a Get Yashan. The Ezeh who Get Yashan, so the Mishnah asks, what is this? Kol Shenis Yachad Ima Acha Shekhsov Allah. That's where the husband had Yichud with his wife after they wrote the Get, before it was given. And Halacha follows Beis Hillel, then you're not allowed to be Megarish a woman with a Get Yashan. B'di'evin, though, let's say she was Megureshes with a Get Yashan, then it is effective and she can use that Get to remarry Lechatchila. That's according to the Rambam, based on the Gemara. But Rashi writes that, no, this whole halacha of bidiyeved, that she can marry, that is only where the husband went overseas and he's not available. But if he is around, then he should write another get because he should not use this get yashan. Perekhes Mishnah Hey. Now, the Mishnah here is going to be discussing where in the get, there was the writing of the year of the particular monarchy at that time. The days of the Mishnah, that was customary to have. That's what the non-Jews would do. They would write the documents based on the year of the monarchy at that time. So the same thing would be true when it came to documents. The Jews would do the same thing. This way, in order to keep the peace between whatever government was in charge at that time, they would write as well the year of that particular king at that time. So the Mishnah here, though, said, and based on that, the Chachamim said, well, if you're writing a get, so of course you're going to be writing besides the name of the woman, the man and the woman, and the date, you're going to be writing obviously the Hebrew date, but also the date based on the year of the monarchy of the king of that time. But you cannot write, the Chachamim said, you should not write anything about any other king, any other monarchy, any other king should not be written in the get. Even if you have, let's say it's a king that ruled at an earlier time, that's also should not be written in the get. And that's where the Mishnah is going to begin with, at least. Kasav l'shem malchus She'ena Hogenes. A man wrote a get for his wife, and Malchus She'ena Hogenes, the Gemara explains that he's in Bavel. And he wrote a get in Bavel, and he dated it by the years of the Malchus She'ena Hogenes, the improper, unworthy Malchus, which is a reference to the Roman Empire. That's what we say. Why is that an unworthy kingdom? Because it didn't have, the Gemara says on Daf Pei, it didn't have its own language, it didn't have its own alphabet, it adapted it from other languages, from other nations, and that's why it's called the Malchus She'ena Hogenes. So when you're writing a get in Bavel, you'll say, hold on, this anyway is, now everyone knows it's a Malchus She'ena Hogenes. No one should be insulted by that. The Babylonian Empire shouldn't care about writing anything about the Roman Empire. They wouldn't be insulted by that. Nonetheless, the halacha is that you should not mention even a Malchus She'ena Hogenes in the get. And L'shom Malchus Madai, L'shom Malchus Yavon. Are you not allowed to write these kingdoms, right? Dating a get based on when they would reign? Even though you say, hold on, why? That certainly shouldn't be a problem. This is not only Eino Hogenes, where no one should be insulted about. They no longer exist. Madai media is no he not here anymore. L'shom Malchus Yavon, Greek as well. So that shouldn't be an issue. And maybe that shouldn't cause any jealousy. They shouldn't be upset about that, insulted by that. So nonetheless, you can't put that in a get either. Levinyan Abayis, you can't even write dating a get by the years since the binyan, the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. So they said, why should that shouldn't bother them at all? Who cares that you're not writing about another kingdom? You're speaking about the Beis HaMikdash. Still can't write that. L'churban HaBayis, even better. L'churban HaBayis, destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Why would they care about that? So nonetheless, that certainly wouldn't cause any jealousy. No, we're still afraid writing the Churban HaBayis based on the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, certainly. Why? Because maybe they're going to be upset. The Malchus in Bavel is going to be upset that you're speaking about it. You have this longing, yearning to go back, Terry, so maybe it's going to cause a rebellion. You don't want to write that in the get. Hayavam is based on the years since the Churban HaBayis. Hayavam Izrach, now another halacha, the Kasav Bamarav. Let's say the husband is in the east, and he writes, and the sofer writes in the get, Bamarav in the west. That means that the sofer is writing the wrong location into the get, meaning he wrote it as the place, the witnesses signed it in a different place, and he wrote it based on the place where he's actually writing the get, but it should be based on where the witnesses are signing it. But it's not a problem. You can write the text of the get, can be written wherever it is, as long as the witnesses are signing it in that particular place. So that means, for example, if he writes the get in Yerushalayim, and the get is signed in Tel Aviv. Now, if he wrote in the get the city of Yerushalayim and they sign in Tel Aviv, that's a problem, because in the get it says this get is written and signed in Yerushalayim, and then they sign it in a different city, so it's not true. But he can write the get in Yerushalayim and then bring it to Tel Aviv. And as long as he wrote Tel Aviv in the get and they're signing the get in Tel Aviv, no problem that he wrote Tel Aviv in the get, even though he wrote that get in Yerushalayim. You can write the get in another city, as long as the city that you write in the get that's written actually on the document is the city where the get is going to be signed. So here the problem is, V'kaya Bamizrach, he was in the east, because of Bamarav, and he wrote Bamarav, which means that he wrote the wrong city of where he's writing the wrong location. So the Edom are starting to get in another place, or Bamarav because of Bamizrach. Some say that, no, the get actually has to be written and signed in the place that's stated within the get as the same location where it was actually written. So that's a machlokas, how to understand when it says Hayav Amizrach, the Kasav Barav, Barav because of Amizrach. Different ways to understand that line in the Mishnah. But the bottom line is, in all of these cases, where you wrote the get l'shum, you're in Bavel and write it for a Malchus She'ena Hogenes, you mentioned the Roman Empire, the years of the Roman Empire in the get. And the Chachamim said, that's not a good get. And you wrote Malchus Madai, Malchus Yavan, Binyan Abayis, Chor Abayis, things that we don't want to have written in the get. Or you wrote the wrong location, let's say, the way we described it. In all of these cases, Teitzei Mizeh Umizeh, Number one, this get is not considered valid, and she has to leave if she received a get with any of these problems that we mentioned in the Mishnah, and she remarries, so now she has to leave both of the husbands. Her original husband she can't live with, because she officially had, because since the get is not valid, we could say she now lived with another man during that marriage. This is the same halacha is from the Mishnah in Sota, Asrul Labal Vasrul Laboel. She can't live with her husband anymore. She can't live with the Boel, the one with whom she had an affair. So that the halacha is that way. Since the get was invalid, living with the second husband she thought she was married to is considered like adultery, and therefore she's forbidden both to her husband and the adulterer, or maybe it's only rabbinic nonetheless. Utzricha get mizeh umizeh, and if she wants to marry someone else, so she needs to get from each of the two husbands. Now, what's her status exactly? So one way to understand the Mishnah is she needs to get from the first partner. She was married absolutely to the first husband, and midoraisa, therefore she needs to get. Why? Because that original get he gave her was invalid. Why was it invalid? Because you wrote something wrong in the get. You wrote the wrong location. You wrote to the reign of a certain government that you weren't supposed to put in the get. So therefore, she's still married to the first man. And now she wants to marry a third person. She needs a real get me d'oraisa from the first husband. The second husband's marriage wasn't really a marriage. So why does she need a get from him? So the Chachamim said you need a get. Why? So people wouldn't think, oh, I know, I see what's happening. That the first get, the first get was really good, and the second marriage was valid. And now she's leaving a second marriage without being divorced. She's still married to the second man. So she needs a get from the second man, midrabanan. First man, midaraisa, second man, midrabanan. Now, the way to understand the Mishnah here, if you think about it, is why is it that she needs, what are we saying here? Teitzei mizeh mizeh, she can't live with either of these men. And we even assume that if she has a child now, she is from the second married child that's born from the second marriage has the status of a mamzer. Why? She's an Eishes Ish. An Eishes Ish? Because she lived with this man, and she was still married to the first one. Now, this is Rabbi Meir's opinion, where we say, kol matbe, a person who is mishanem imatbeya shatavu chachamim begitin havla mazir. This is Rabbi Meir's opinion, where if a person deviates at all from even that which the rabbis say regarding laws of getting, the child's going to be mamzer. So let's think about this. If you didn't accept Rabbi Meir's opinion, you would say, hold on one second. This woman is married to the first man. He gives her a get. So on a d'oraisa level, the get should be fine. Why? Because what's wrong with it? It has everything it needs. The fact that it has the wrong location, or it has a government it shouldn't have written in there, an old government, whatever it is, or you're a korban habayis. That's all midrabanan makes it an invalid get. But midoraisa, it's absolutely, it's a valid get, and therefore she should be divorced, and therefore living with the other man should not produce a mamzer. Nonetheless, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion, if you change anything, even from that which the Chachamim say, and the Chachamim say they've declared this get invalid, so then she's officially having an affair with this other man, and the child will be a mamzer. So there we have to understand the Mishnah based on Rabbi Meir's opinion. There is another way to understand the Mishnah. We'll have to understand the rest of the Mishnah based on these two opinions. We'll only quote it over here. And others say that these gittin are both only are only null and void midrabanan. What does that mean? That they are actually do remain a mutter midaraisa. Meaning, the way we understand the Mishnah is that the Chachamim have the right to say that this get is no good, and therefore it's as if the get is not good even on a daraisa level, and that's why it's like she's having an affair with this other man based on this get, and therefore the child will be a mamzer. And others say no, the getting in this in the Mishnah are actually midaraisa, are absolutely valid. So therefore, she needs a get, another get from the first husband. Why? Because it's only midrabanan that it's nullified, that the first get really should be absolutely acceptable. And if the second husband is actually a get d'oraisa. So here, it's the exact opposite, that you could say the first get, we'll say, it was absolutely mutter midoraisa. So she's absolutely divorced on a d'oraisa level. Only the rabbanan say the get is no good. So now that she married the second man, that's an absolutely acceptable kiddushin. So she's now biblically married to him. She would need a get to Oraisa term. So instead of being the first get, now we flipped it. Now we're saying that she's married to me daraisa to the second man and really divorced me daraisa from the first man. So different ways. So you need two gittin, but the gittin have a different status. Okay, we'll try to learn the Mishnah the first way just to simplify things. Then the Mishnah says, ve'ema loksuba. So now this is this woman who married someone else based on a get that was invalid midarabbanan. So we said that she needs a get from both of them. Each one needs to give a get if she wants to marry a third person. She cannot live with either of these men because it's as if she committed adultery, even though it's a midarabbanan, according to some. Ve'ein la lo ksuva. So now we go through many penalties that the woman has based on this. Since she married someone else without receiving a valid get, the get was pasul midrabbanan, and we treated it as if she's still a married woman, and yet she married someone else in the interim, so she's not going to receive any of the ksuva. Normally, what she would get when she's divorced. Why? Because why do we have a ksuva? The ksuva is to discourage men from divorcing their wives. That's why they have, so we give them this financial responsibility, so they're not quick to divorce their wives. But that's But here we have no reason to do so. The Chachamim say, I want the husband to divorce you. So if I want the husband to divorce you, so then there's no reason for her to collect the ksuva. Velo peros. What does it mean, peros? So we remember learning about nechse mulug. Nechse mulug is where we have, is where there is the property of the husband. The wife the wife brings into the marriage property, and the husband gets to eat the peros, but the keren, the principal, belongs to her. So during their lifetime, the husband was eating peros. So what the Mishnah is saying here, according to different ways to understand the Mishnah, one explanation is that the husband doesn't pay her back for any of the peros of her property that he consumed while they were married, because that's one of the penalties for her now marrying someone without receiving a kosher get. And others say no, velo peros means something else. It means that the she is not included in the din derabbanan, the takana derabbanan, which gives the husband the rights of the produce, which is that we in Maseches Ksuvos, we remember, we discussed the fact that a husband is obligated to redeem her if she's taken captive, and in exchange for that, he is able to eat the peros of her nechsei malug. So what we're saying is that this is not a right that he has. This is a specifically because this is part of the ksuba obligation that he gets to eat the peros, but she's not entitled to the ksuba, so this is also not in effect. So the husbands, what do they have to do? In fact, they would have to reimburse her for any peros they were eating from the property during that time, and he wouldn't have to redeem her if she's captured, because this is also not a right that he has, since they are officially were not married. He would have to reimburse her, and that halach of peros does not apply. So different ways to understand what velo peros means. Either means he doesn't have to reimburse her, or it means that no, in fact, he does have to reimburse her. He didn't have the right to eat those peros during that marriage. Velo mizonos. Not only that, she doesn't receive any money towards food. The husband is not, let's say she borrows from someone to buy food. The husband doesn't have to pay that person back that she borrowed money from. And this is also part of the ksuva, an obligation of the ksuva. And it's based on the fact that she had married someone without paying attention. The fact that the get was puzzled, was disqualified. This is also velo mizonos. She doesn't get mizonos. Velo blows. Not only that, she is not blows, is nichrim. Remember, we're learning ksuvas. Nichsei tzon barzel. That's where the woman brings in property to the marriage. This is written, this is actually written in the ksuva. And this is property that the husband actually owns the principal. But he would have to pay back the fixed value when they get divorced. So any loss of principal is now on the husband to make sure to pay that back. So that means blows, worn out clothing. She brought in clothing and now it's worn out. He would have to pay back its value of what that clothing was worth when they got married. So the halacha here is that he does not have to do that. He doesn't have to replace any of this loss. Obviously the clothing the way they are, any worn out clothing or furniture or anything else you brought into the match, he gives it back to the way it is, but it doesn't have to pay back for any loss that there was if it depreciated over time. Lo alze velo alze. And this means that these are payments that she cannot claim from either husband, from the original husband, nor from the new man that she had married. Not only that, if she took any of these payments of the peros, the ksuba, the mizonos, blows, whatever, she has to return it. In certain cases, we have where there's some conflict financially, so we say, okay, you don't have to pay, but if the person in tafas lo mafkinim, if the person takes it, you don't have to take it away from them. And here we would. She has absolutely no rights to them. This is part of the penalty for now marrying someone else when she wasn't really divorced. So if she actually took any of these what are normally financial obligations of the husband, if she took any of them, she doesn't have rights to them and have to return it. Not only that, v'havlad, mamzer mizeh u'mizeh. This is really what we're saying, which is Rabbi Meir's opinion. The child is going to be a mamzer from each of these. Now, any child from the second husband, let's understand at least the first way. Any child from the second husband is a mamzer d'oraisa. Why? Because the divorce from the first husband was null and void. We said, what do you mean? Isn't it kasha d'oraisa? That's one way to learn the Mishnah. But we're assuming, like Rabbi Meir, that what if, since the get was disqualified, meaning the Rabbanan, we assume that they are still married even on a d'oraisa level. So they're married completely, rather. And this is an affair that she's having with the second husband. We assume that the first get is completely disqualified on all levels, and it's not even kasher d'oraisa, and therefore having a child from the second husband is going to be a mamzer. What about a child from the first husband? If you're telling me she was never, she was not divorced, so then she's still married to the first husband, so why would you say if she has a child from that husband that is a mamzer? So we say the child of that, let's say she went back to the first husband, that's a mamzer midrabanan. And also we would treat that, and there are different ways to treat a mamzer midrabanan, but that's absolutely one way to learn the Mishnah. As we said, like Rabbi Meir, if kol ha-mishaneh mi-matbeah she-tabu chachamah be-gitin av la-mamzer, that even if it's a drabanan that you're deviating from, you have to follow their formula, and if you didn't, we treat the child as a mamzer, even though what seems to be only a rabbinic problem, we treat it like d'oraisa. And of course, if you learn the Mishnah differently, as we said, that no, maybe really the get still remains is a kosher get me d'oraisa, and therefore she's really divorced from the first husband and is married to the second husband. So then we could say, okay, so the child maybe from the second husband is only a mamzer d'rabbanan, and a mamzer from the first child is mamzer d'oraisa because she's really married to the second husband. Different way to learn Mishnah. Then the Mishnah says, v'lo zevo ze mitamin lo. Neither of these husbands can become tamei. If they are a kohen, they cannot make themselves tamei as normally a husband would be able to. If he's a kohen and his wife passes away, he has the right to go to the funeral, v'mitamei meis, but here, because they're not allowed to live together intimately, of course, they're supposed to be divorced from one another, so then this exemption of a wife, of a relative for a kohen, does not apply. So that's also... regarding tumah, regarding don't going to the funeral, regarding beryl. V'lo zeba zez zakoin lo b'mitziyasa v'lo b'masa yodeh v'lo b'hafarsa dareh. Normal rights of a husband that a husband has, a mitzia, an object that was found, we had an object that a wife finds because the husband is supporting her, so he has a right to that mitzia, not to cause any resentment, any animosity. Here we don't care about that. After all, we want him to divorce her, so he does not have the right. Her mitzia, anything she finds belongs to her. Maisadim, her earnings, of course, are going to belong to her. When a husband has an obligation to support his wife, so then he gets the mitzia. He has an obligation to support his wife. He gets the maisadim, her earnings. But here, doesn't have that obligation. So therefore, she is able to keep her own earnings. And hafaras nidarim, hafaras annulling vows, that's only a husband's right. But that's but since they're not supposed to be married one to the other, so therefore he cannot annul her vows. Haisa bas Yisrael nifelis ben hakohuna. Let's say she was a bas Yisrael. So based on having living with this other man, which is we're treating as adultery, maybe drabanan, but nonetheless she has the status of a zona, and we're treating it according to another opinion, we're treating like adultery d'oraisa, and therefore she can't marry. She's nagozona. She cannot marry a kohen, and therefore even if both men die without divorcing her, therefore she's not a grusha and she's only an almana, she still cannot marry a kohen by virtue of being a zona. Bas Levi, mina maser. If she's a bas Levi, she can't eat maser. Now maser rishon is given to Levi, as we know. And according to Rabbi Meir, if you're a non-Levi, you can't eat Maaser Rishon. Not everyone holds that way. Other Tanaim hold that no, Yisrael's allowed to eat Maaser Rishon. So what should be the issue here? She's a Maaser Levi. She can't eat Maaser. What do you mean? Anyone is allowed to eat Maaser. Even Yisrael can eat Maaser. So the answer must be Maaser Levi min Maaser means if she's Maaser Levi, we don't give her Maaser. The same way we give a Levi Maaser, this we would not give her Maaser because she, as a Maaser Levi, does not have the status of a Maaser Levi. This is one of the penalties she has for not being careful to make sure that the get she was receiving from the first husband was a valid get. Bas Kohen menat Truma. And if she's a Bas Kohen, she cannot eat Truma. Now, why would I need the Mishnah to tell me that? If she can't eat Maaser, she certainly can't eat Truma. Truma is Misa B'dei Shamayim. If you're not able to eat Truma, so the answer is even Truma D'Rabbanan, she's going to be disqualified from. And then Yorshav Shel Zeh, V'Yorshav Shel Zeh, Yorshin K'su Basa. The Yorshim of each of these, of both of these marriages, so they're not going to be Yoresh Haraksuba. We learned earlier, we spoke about the Ksuvas Benin Dichrin in Maseches Ksuvos, and that is that the Ksuva is inherited by the children of the wife, even though normally all of the property, the entire estate really goes to the Yorshim, to the boys, who are the children of the father. The father may have children from multiple wives. Nonetheless, the ksuva is inherited specifically by each wife, by the children and the inheritors of each of these wives. So we're saying that ksuvas benin dichrin, that ksuva that is inherited by, normally, that's normally inherited by the banim zacharim, the male children of this woman and in any marriage. So we would say the same thing here. She, from either of the marriages, with the male children from whether the first man or the second man, after all, this is their mother, they're not going to be Yorosh or Ksuva. Why? Because Ksuvas Benin Dechron does not apply. She's not entitled to the Ksuva, so therefore her sons don't have any rights to it either. V'mesu, let's say either of these two men would die, and they didn't have any children. So now she falls before, let's say, a surviving brother for Yibam. The brother of either of these husbands cannot perform Yibam. They perform only Chalitza. So let's understand why. Based on our the way we've been learning the Mishnah, the brother of the first husband, who she was actually married to, as it means Doraisa, so that he's obligated me Doraisa to perform Chalitza. She's really married to him. The second man, so what we say, the way we understood the Mishnah, was that she was really not married to him at all. And only the Rabbanan does she need a get, because she's still really married to the first man, and therefore really the real mamzer is from the second husband, the way we were understanding the Mishnah. So that would be true. So the brother of the second person should perform chalitza, not midoraisa. There's no Zika, there's no connection on a Doraisa level, because she's really married only to the first husband. And nonetheless, people think that the second marriage was valid. We're afraid of that. That the same way she would need a get, she would also need Chalitza, because people should not think look at that, she's married to this man, and she's released without Chalitza. Nonetheless, no one's allowed to perform Yibam. That's part of the penalty that she receives. Another way to explain also why you can't perform Yibam is that Amidaraisa, we consider her as committing adultery. Anyone who's committed adultery is not allowed to live, obviously, with the brother-in-law for the purposes of Yibam. Then the Mishnah says, Shina Shma Ushma. Let's say another halacha. And let's say they wrote the wrong name of the husband or wife on the get. Some say it doesn't just mean the wrong name. It just means that the man or woman, let's say, are called different names in different places. So the husband wrote in the get only the names that were used in the place where they wrote the get, but didn't write other names. Or Shemira v'Shemira, he wrote the wrong city, Shemira v'Shemira was a mistake. He didn't write the right city from where they normally live. Or maybe they wrote different names to the towns that they live in. This town is called this in one place, but it's called something else in another place. And you didn't write, and you wrote the wrong one. So he wrote, let's say, only one of the names of the town where he or she was living, and not all the names of the town. So you didn't write all of her names, all of his names. You didn't write all of the names of the town, all the names that this town, particular town, has, which is her primary residence, or his primary residence. You didn't write all the names of the towns, but they're called the different places. Teitze Mizeh Mizeh, in this case as well, where the names are wrong, or the cities are wrong. She also has to leave both of these, meaning based on that get, she now remarried. But you realize that the names are wrong, or you didn't write all of the names that you should have. So then the same rules apply, and all the procedures, all the things that we said earlier in the Mishnah will apply to such a woman, because we're assuming again that this get may be, even if it's assuming it's us or only possibly the Rabbanon, nonetheless, she now lived with a new man when she was really married to the first one and didn't have a valid get, and we penalize her all of the ways that we did previously. And then future Mishnayos as well are going to give us other cases where we're going to employ all of these penalties upon her based on the fact that the first get, she should have been careful with the first get.